Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Not Just Any Earl by Anna Bradley, narrated by Heather Wilds. Chapter 1. Hambledon Manor, Buckinghamshire, England, May 1812. If I didn't know it to be impossible, Emmeline Templeton, I'd think you were burying bodies back there. Emmeline startled, then smothered a yelp at the sudden sharp sting in her thumb. Drat! Cursed thorns! She caught the drop of blood on the tip of her tongue and scrambled to her feet, her lips curving in a grin when she saw Lady Fosbury standing on the other side of the rusted iron gate that surrounded the walled garden. Perhaps I am burying bodies. How can you be so certain it is impossible? Because there isn't a spare body to be had within two counties of Hambledon Manor. Lady Fosbury waved a hand at the deserted garden before turning her attention back to Emmeline, a disapproving frown on her lips. Come out from behind that shrub at once, and let me see the worst of it. Do you suppose you can hide from me? Emmeline had supposed so, but she should have known better. Lady Fosbury could spot the flutter of a butterfly's wings from miles away. I beg your pardon, my lady. Emmeline made a futile attempt to brush off the dirt smearing her pinafore. If I'd known you intended a visit today, I would have made myself presentable. My dear child, we both know that to be an egregious lie. Lady Fosbury took in Emmeline's unruly hair and muddy boots with a despairing shake of her head. You're an utter fright, just as I suspected. You must stop digging in the dirt in this outrageous way, Emmeline. Young ladies shouldn't behave like common labourers. It's unbecoming. As she was the only one who ever laboured in the walled garden since they'd lost their groundskeeper 2 years earlier, Emmeline supposed she was common enough. And it wasn't as if there was anyone about to see her. No one ever came to Hambledon Manor any more. Emmeline couldn't imagine why Lady Fosbury still bothered with them, but she'd been a dear friend of their father's, and had proved a steadfast friend since scandal chased the Templetons out of London 3 years earlier. I just popped in to have a look at my father's roses. What's left of them? Neglect and disease had reduced what was once a blooming garden to a few sickly canes and a handful of withered leaves. It's dirty work, I'm afraid. Lady Fosbury's face softened at the mention of James Templeton. You're a good girl, Emmeline, for all your odd ways. Emmeline smiled at that. Lady Fosbury would think her even odder if she knew Emmeline had been digging in the dirt beneath her father's roses for most of the afternoon, and enjoying every muddy, thorny moment of it. I'm surprised to see you, my lady. We didn't expect you in Buckinghamshire until the season ended. What, and let Helena leave without bidding her goodbye? No, indeed. Emmeline's smile faded. Her younger sister Helena was leaving Hambledon Manor in a few days to take up a new position as a governess with an acquaintance of Lady Fosbury's, and there was no telling when the five of them would all be together again, if ever. Their futures looked grim indeed. What had once been a handsome fortune had dwindled to nothing. One by one, they'd all be forced out to work, and their beloved home would fall prey to decay until there was nothing left. I've brought a dozen of Helena's favourite tea cakes from London, with cook's compliments, and of course she'll have my coach for the journey, with two of my footmen. You're very good, my lady, Emmeline murmured past the lump in her throat. Nonsense! Lady Fosbury waved aside her own kindness, as she always did. Quickly now, dearest, there's a juicy tidbit in the Times, and a devilish bit of nonsense in the Morning Post. I'm certain you'll find diverting. Emmeline never found gossiping diverting, but she allowed herself to be dragged inside, where she deposited Lady Fosbury in the drawing-room, then dashed upstairs to tidy herself. By the time she returned, all four of her sisters were there, with the eldest, Euphemia, in her usual place, in front of the fireplace. "Emmeline, here you are at last. Goodness, that took an age. Come here, child, and sit by me." Lady Fosbury patted the empty space beside her on the settee. Now shall we see what wicked gossip the Times has for us today? Yes, yes! Matilda, the youngest of them all, at age 16, let out an excited squeal, as Lady Fosbury handed her the paper. "Is it terribly wicked?" Juliet, who was seated on the other side of Emmeline, tried to read the print over Tilly's shoulder. "What is it, Tilly?" Tilly scanned the paper, then passed it to Juliet with a disappointed sigh. "It's not at all wicked." "Well, what fun is that?" Juliet read the page, then handed it to Helena with a shrug. "It seems Lord Boggs has made a certain lady an offer of marriage, and she's declined him. They don't mention the lady's name." "Ah, but I happen to know the lady's name." Lady Fosbury waggled her brows. "I had it from an unimpeachable source, I assure you." None of them even thought to question the reliability of these unimpeachable sources. The Countess of Fosbury had the ear of the upper 10,000. For all her kindness, her ladyship was an incurable gossip, and never missed a tidbit. "Shall we see if you all can guess which lady has ruined Lord Boggs' fondest hopes?" "Lady Mariana Shelby?" Emmeline said, before any of her sisters could utter a word. Lady Fosbury clapped, delighted. "Remarkable, Emmeline. Really, you girls are a wonder. I begin to suspect you're all hiding crystal balls under your beds." "There's not a bit of magic to it," Fee protested. "It's simply mathematics, or some such nonsense." Lady Fosbury flapped her hand as if banishing mathematics from her presence. "Yes, you said so before, Euphemia, and it's a clever theory, but mathematics teaches us nothing whatsoever about love." "It's not really mathematics, my lady, so much as predictable patterns. As children, we do learn from mathematics how to recognize patterns by studying numbers in a sequence, but..." "People aren't numbers, Euphemia," Lady Fosbury interrupted. "I hope you'll all find out the truth of my words for yourselves, before it's too late." "It's already too late for us." The words rose unbidden in Emmeline's mind, but she said only, "Tilly may, one day." By the time Tilly was old enough to marry, maybe the Ton would have forgiven the Templeton sisters for their mother's sins. "You see, my lady, Lord Boggs has previously demonstrated a weakness for a pretty face." Fee, undeterred by Lady Fosbury's scold, was warming to her subject. "It only makes sense he'd offer for the prettiest lady this season, because he does so every year. One can anticipate, within reason, his future behaviour by his past actions. If it's as simple as you say, Euphemia, then what is Lord Boggs's trouble? Why hasn't he found a willing lady to marry him yet?" "Lord Boggs's trouble," Helena said, "is that he wants a young lady of both beauty and fortune. But he can't lure one into marriage because he's not at all handsome. He's old, very ugly, and unpleasant too. And Lady Mariana is..." "Tilly!" Emmeline cried. "Shame on you!" "Lady Mariana's father is a viscount, and she's very pretty," Tilly went on, ignoring Emmeline. "She needn't marry a fortune, and Lord Boggs's only attraction is his fortune. He needs a lady who hasn't 2 shillings to rub together." "Yes, but he is an earl, Tilly." Helena tossed the newspaper aside. "Given that the Ton only cares about titles and fortunes, one would think Lord Boggs might have whomever he chooses." "He doesn't want just anyone. He wants a belle." Emmeline thought for a moment. "Miss Crowley would do for him. She's not a great beauty like Lady Mariana, but she's pretty, and as poor as a rookery's church mouse." Juliet helped herself to one of Helena's tea cakes. "Lady Mariana has been holding out for Mr. Mayhew, but the season is half over already, and..." "And a bird in the hand, you know," Helena grinned. "For my part, I'd much rather see Lady Mariana with Mr. Mayhew, but Lord Mayhew despises Lord Shelby, and Mr. Mayhew won't disoblige his uncle, or he'll be cut off without a shilling." "Yes, and that will never do for a gentleman who plays as deep as Mr. Mayhew. There's another pattern for you, my lady." Fee turned to Lady Fosbury with a provoking grin. "All the Mayhew men are hardened gamesters, and they'll all marry fortunes. I predict Mr. Mayhew will offer for Lady Philippa Wingate." "I don't like to see poor Miss Crowley get stuck with Lord Boggs." Helena let out a little sigh on behalf of poor Miss Crowley. "He's 2 decades older than she is." "Yes, but it would be an excellent match for her. Not a happy one, but secure, certainly." Juliet finished her tea cake and dusted the crumbs from her fingers. "Don't you think so, Lady Fosbury?" "The match has merit from Miss Crowley's perspective, yes, but I've never liked such matches. It seems a shame to condemn such a sweet young lady as Miss Crowley to a lifetime with demanding, ill-tempered Lord Boggs. It's wrong we should know so much about a gentleman we've never met." Helena wrinkled her nose. "Gossip is a dreadful thing." "Dreadful? Why, I think it's perfectly delightful. But, my dears, what do you say to this?" Lady Fosbury paused until she had their full attention. "I have it, on the highest authority, Lord Melrose intends to marry this season."
"Lord Melrose? Isn't he the... what do you call it?"
Tilly's brows drew together.
"I can't remember what one is meant to call a gentleman who's an incomparable."
"The Nonsuch," Helena said. "One refers to him as the Nonsuch." "No one refers to him as Lord Melrose." Juliet fell back against the sofa, feigning a swoon. Emmeline rolled her eyes.
"Lord Melrose was meant to marry last season as well, and the season before that. The Ton always thinks he steps away from stumbling into the parson's mousetrap, but he hasn't been caught yet."
It didn't appear to Emmeline that Lord Melrose was in any hurry to marry, but Lady Fosbury was never wrong about such things. If she said Lord Melrose would wed this season, the man was doomed to become betrothed before grouse season commenced.
"I think he'll offer for Lady Philippa."
Lady Fosbury attempted a careless shrug, but Emmeline didn't miss the mischievous gleam in her ladyship's eyes, and she hid a smile. Her ladyship was forever trying to trip them into a matchmaking error, but she was rarely successful.
"Lord Melrose is meant to marry Lady Christine Dingley. His mother wished for the match, and he's hardly going to go against his deceased mother's wishes, is he?
Besides, Lady Christine is the season's belle," Juliet added.
"To the belle go the spoils."
Emmeline thought the marriage mart was rather ridiculous, really, with its belle, and the incomparable, and the Nonsuch. But then the Ton was ridiculous. Why would their approach to marriage be sensible?
"I can't say I think Lord Melrose is the sort to defy expectations,"
Fee tapped her lip, considering it, "particularly in a matter of such consequence as choosing a wife."
"He is very proper,"
Helena agreed.
"Well, he's had to be since that awful fever took his parents off. Dreadful business, that."
Lady Fosbury shuddered. "An ancient title, an enormous fortune, a dozen or more properties, and three younger sisters to look after, knocked the boyish antics right out of poor Melrose."
"But even his mistresses are proper."
Tilly snatched another tea cake off the plate.
"Let's not forget his mistresses."
"Tilly!" Emmeline scolded, shocked.
"Hush, will you?"
"What? Do you suppose I don't know about mistresses?" "Well, I do. Lord Melrose has had a number of them, and each of them as proper as a governess."
"Is there such a thing as a proper mistress?"
Juliet turned a doubtful look on Lady Fosbury. Lady Fosbury gave an airy wave of her hand.
"Discreet widows are the thing." "Never mind his mistresses."
Emmeline shot Tilly a quelling look.
"If past patterns are predictive of future behaviour, and I submit they are..."
"Predictive behavioural patterns," Lady Fosbury snorted.
"My dear girl, people are nothing if not unpredictable. They rarely do what one expects them to. You'd do well to remember that."
"Lord Melrose would do precisely what's expected of him, and marry Lady Christine," Emmeline finished.
"He hasn't yet.
Indeed, he doesn't appear to have the least inclination toward Lady Christine, and the season is nearly half finished."
"The Ton begins to whisper. She won't bring him up to scratch."
Lady Fosbury lowered her voice, as if Lady Christine's failure was shocking indeed.
"That is curious, that Lord Melrose hadn't yet succumbed to Lady Christine's dubious charms rather improved him, in Emmeline's estimation.
But she predicted his rebellion would be short-lived."
"Still, there must be something to your theories," Lady Fosbury admitted grudgingly.
"You did predict Lord Eton would marry Miss Yates last season, though it was her third season, and the Ton had given her up as a spinster.
One needn't have a comprehensive knowledge of mathematics to put Lord Eton and Miss Yates together. He's wanted her since her first season, and was only waiting for his father to die before offering for her. Still, Emmeline couldn't deny she and her sisters had been remarkably accurate, for all that their matchmaking had begun as a game. It was meant to be a harmless way for them to amuse themselves, but they'd honed their skills over the long, quiet winters in Buckinghamshire. As for Lord Melrose, you forget, my dears, that I've known him since he was in short pants. I tell you, he's just the gentleman to surprise us all. I know it's statistically possible, Fee began. As are many things that will never happen, Emmeline interrupted. But given Lord Melrose's behavioural patterns, I don't think it likely. I predict Lady Christine will become the Countess of Melrose before the final ball of the season. Emmeline thought it rather a pity, really, as she didn't think Lord Melrose and Lady Christine a good match. But then everyone paid a price for the gifts bestowed upon them by fate, and Lord Melrose appeared destined to be cursed with a silly, disagreeable wife. Oh, that reminds me. Lady Fosbury snatched up the copy of the Morning Gazette she'd brought with her this afternoon. There's the most delectable bit of gossip here about Lady Philippa nearly coming to blows with Lady Christine over a length of lavender silk at Madame Toussaint's shop. Emmeline couldn't imagine an existence where a length of lavender silk was one's greatest concern. Who won the prize, Lady Christine or Lady Philippa? Lady Christine. Lady Fosbury's brow furrowed. I can't make out how she did it, as she's a dainty little thing, but then a lady is known to find great reserves of strength when it comes to a pretty piece of silk. If Lady Christine has chosen lavender, Tilly observed, it must be all the rage this season. Indeed, my dears, there's not a single scrap of lavender silk to be had in all of London. Lavender? Of all absurd colours, Juliet began on another tea cake. It doesn't flatter any but the fairest ladies, but then I suppose that's why Lady Christine chose it. Lady Christine's machinations will serve her well this season. Helena nibbled daintily around the edges of her own tea cake, a thoughtful expression on her face. The marriage mart is rather like the animal kingdom, isn't it? The most aggressive members of the herd flourish while...
Herd?
Lady Fosbury gasped. I'm going to act as if I didn't hear that, Helena Templeton. The difference is, animals act by instinct alone, whereas the ton is motivated by cultural prejudices, social pressure, and economic gain. It's perfectly logical in a civilized society to approach marriage thus, of course, but...
Love isn't logical, Emmeline.
Lady Fosbury gave an offended sniff. Neither is the heart a civilized organ, nor should it be. Are we talking about love? Helena asked innocently. I thought we were discussing marriage.
My dear child, one hopes they're one and the same.
You misunderstand me, my lady. I mean to say the ton would do better to approach marriage with an eye to complementary characteristics, rather than fortune and pedigree, but they limit themselves by choosing spouses only from their own exalted ranks. I don't have anything to say against love. Emmeline had nothing to say in favour of it either, but she thought it prudent to keep that opinion to herself.
Humph! Well, I'm pleased to hear you say so, as cynicism is not an attractive quality in a young lady.
Was she cynical? Emmeline didn't think so, though perhaps her own disastrous season had jaded her somewhat. Above all, though, she was a scientist. When one considers the matter scientifically, matchmaking isn't so very different from botany.
Not botany again!
Tilly buried her face in her hands with a groan. Emmeline ignored her. A mindful botanist doesn't just cobble together any two roses that happen to grow in the same garden and expect a perfect bloom. They research a plant's characteristics, study their growth patterns, then choose two that are ideally matched. Plant them in fertile soil, and nurture them until the desired outcome is achieved.
Well then, girls,
Lady Fosbury looked between them, a calculating gleam in her eyes. Since you're all such accomplished matchmakers, who would you all choose for Lord Melrose? Who is his ideal match? A lady from this season's offerings, you mean? Emmeline asked.
No, I mean any lady, ton or not, and regardless of her family or fortune.
I choose a lady who is fond of the country, but equally at home in London, Fee said. A lady who delights in society, and who values family above all else, a lady of beauty, wit, and spirit, a lady of charm and vivacity, with some experience of grief to lend depth to her character, but who hasn't been irretrievably damaged by it. Lady Fosbury arched a brow. My goodness, Euphemia, you seem to have given Lord Melrose's marriage prospects a great deal of thought. Who, may I inquire, is this paragon of womanhood? A lady very much like... Fee paused dramatically. Miss Juliet Templeton. There was a brief, stunned silence, and then the room exploded in excited chatter. Juliet! Well, she's the prettiest lady I know, much prettier than Lady Mariana, Tilly declared, with a fond glance at Juliet. Certainly, she's the only one of us with any pretensions to being a beauty. Helena studied Juliet for a moment, then gave a decisive nod. Yes, I think you'd do very well as the Countess of Melrose. Juliet and Lord Melrose. Emmeline cocked her head, considering it. If there'd been another lady to rival Juliet among the ranks of the Ton, Emmeline would have despaired of her sister having any chance at all with Lord Melrose. But his options this season were disappointingly few. The young ladies on offer were very much in the style of Lady Christine. Lord Melrose didn't strike Emmeline as the sort of gentleman to surprise them, no matter what Lady Fosbury said. Still, if he were willing to choose a bride from outside the aristocracy, he'd likely gravitate toward a lady like Juliet, for all the reasons Fee had mentioned. That was a significant if, however. While an animal would naturally choose their best mate when presented with them, gentlemen, alas, weren't as clever as animals. Lord Melrose might be predisposed to choose a mate with Juliet's characteristics, but first he'd have to abandon all the criteria by which aristocratic gentlemen chose their spouses. Emmeline had yet to see that happen. Juliet seemed to agree, because she was gaping at her sisters as if they'd all gone mad. The Countess of Melrose. I have as much chance of becoming a countess as I do a turnip. I don't even know Lord Melrose, and short of his having a carriage accident outside Hambledon Manor, I dare say I never will. Helena deflated. That is a bit of a stumbling block, isn't it? Oh, but there isn't any reason you can't meet him. Lady Fosbury made a great show of smoothing her skirts. Unless, of course, you're not as certain of your matchmaking schemes as you profess to be. Emmeline frowned. What do you mean? It's quite simple, really. If you're as confident as you say you are, then you won't object to testing your theories, will you? Isn't that what scientists do? Emmeline exchanged a glance with Fee. Yes, but how are we meant to test such a thing? Present Juliet to Lord Melrose on a silver platter, as if she was a tea cake, and inform him she's his future countess? Lady Fosbury snorted. I wouldn't go that far. No, I'm merely suggesting a tiny wager. That's all. Emmeline didn't like the sound of that, nor did she trust the shrewd glint in Lady Fosbury's eyes. What sort of wager? Why, only this, dearest. You'll come to London with me when I return tomorrow, and apply your matchmaking schemes to the marriage mart. Emmeline's eyes went wide. No, surely not. Surely she couldn't be serious. I'll go, Tilly cried, bouncing on her chair with excitement. Please, may I go, Fee? Fee was staring at Lady Fosbury, all the colour gone from her cheeks. Fee, mayn't I? No, Tilly. Fee's tone was harsher than usual. You're far too young for a London season. Emmeline and Juliet, then. But Lady Fosbury's gaze was fixed on Emmeline. If your theories prove accurate, and Juliet receives an offer from Lord Melrose, I'll take Euphemia to the continent with me this winter, and give Tilly a season when the time comes. Emmeline's mouth dropped open. But that's... No, my lady, you're very generous, but we can't possibly do such a thing. It was one thing for them to speculate about ton matches amongst themselves, and quite another to engage in callous, unfeeling wagers about the lives of real people. Even callous, unfeeling people. Well, that is disappointing, Lady Fosbury said with a sigh. Is there nothing I can do to persuade you? No, Emmeline shook her head. Not a single thing. I'm afraid it's out of the question, my lady. Pity. Lady Fosbury plucked a bit of lint from her sleeve.
Did I mention, Emmeline, that my rose garden flourishes? No? I dare say I forgot to tell you that your dear papa gifted me with ever so many cuttings from his rare hybrid roses. Emmeline stared at her, speechless. Why, Lady Fosbury might have been Eve herself, but in place of an apple she was holding the promise of a deep red rose in her hand. Dear God! The woman was positively diabolical. Lady Fosbury knew how badly Emmeline wanted to save her father's beloved roses, particularly the Hambledon Glory, a truly exceptional specimen he'd named to honour the home he'd loved so well. She had plans for that rose, plans she hadn't shared with anyone. But a season in London, the very idea was appalling. Emmeline opened her mouth to refuse again, but before she could utter a word, Juliet stunned them all by rising to her feet and declaring in a tone that discouraged no argument, "I accept your wager, Lady Fosbury. When do we leave for London?" Chapter 2. Hampstead Heath, London. 1 month later. Jonathan Parrish, the celebrated Earl of Melrose, the gentleman the young ladies sighed over, the nonsuch, the Corinthian, the petted and admired darling of the ton, was two fingers of brandy away from casting up his accounts all over Lady Fosbury's gleaming ballroom floor. He couldn't be certain, not being a man who usually drank to excess, but Jonathan had a vague notion casting up one's accounts during a cotillion wasn't the done thing. The devil of it was, he couldn't work out how the evening had disintegrated into a drunken debauch. He and Lord Cross set out with the intention of going directly to Lady Fosbury's ball, but one glass of brandy in Cross's study had led to another, then another, and then somehow they'd ended up at White's. It went a bit hazy after that, but now Lady Fosbury's ballroom was spinning around Jonathan in a nauseating whirl of gold damask wallpaper. "We would have done better to avoid this ball altogether, Melrose." Jonathan peered at Lord Cross. He didn't seem to be in the least impaired by the brandy, but then, those weaknesses that afflicted mere mortal men, drunkenness, lust, love, never had much effect on him. Cross was scrutinizing the company with his usual expression. One eyebrow quirked, jaw relaxed, and infinitesimal crinkles at the corners of his eyes.
"How in the world do you do that, Cross?"
The eyebrow rose a notch.
"Do what?"
Jonathan waved a hand at Cross's face.
"Contrive to look both bored and amused at the same time. I've always wondered."
Cross rolled his eyes.
"My advice to you, Melrose, is to quit this ball before your senses quit you. I don't know what's come over you this evening, but you're in no state of mind for a cotillion."
Jonathan drew himself up with as much dignity as he could muster, given his difficulties with the gold wallpaper.
"Are you implying I can't hold my drink? How dare you, Cross?"
"Did I imply it? I didn't suppose I'd been that subtle. You've dipped too deep tonight, Melrose, and you're too bloody fox to take your lady out to the floor. Is that plain enough for you?" Jonathan grunted.
"You're an unpleasant fellow, Cross.
I don't know why I insisted on having your company this season."
"I haven't the faintest idea, but I wish you hadn't. And she isn't my lady. She's a lady, but she's not mine."
Nor would she ever be, in spite of what the ton might think. Jonathan followed Lady Christine Dingley's slender figure as she tripped gracefully through a country dance. She was wearing a pastel gown of some indeterminate pale purple shade, and appeared perfectly comfortable despite the excruciating heat. There wasn't a hint of a flush on those delicate pink cheeks, or a glimmer of dampness on that smooth brow. In a fit of misguided gallantry, Jonathan had engaged her for a dance this evening when they'd met at Lady Ponsonby's breakfast yesterday, and it was too late to beg off now.
"Save your dance with Lady Christine for another ball, Melrose." "There won't be any other balls for me. I leave for Kent at the end of the week."
Jonathan had been wishing himself anywhere but London since his first night at Almack's, and it had only grown more tiresome since then. He was eager to leave the city behind and join his sisters at his country estate.
"If you insist, but I'm warning you, Melrose, you're sure to make a mess of it." "Am I still standing upright, Cross?"
"For the most part.
Tell me, how many noses do I have?"
Jonathan squinted at Cross.
One and a half?"
Cross shrugged.
"Hey, Close enough. Well then, let's get this over.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?